The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
David Weiner, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, lads.
Let's talk about Liverpool, because, you know, we have to at this stage. Myself and Nathan have already been poring over this, trying to understand what the hell is going on, but also what the repercussions are, because if there's no Champions League football, does that mean Mo Salah has to leave? Does that mean the club want to sell him to cash in? Does that mean Sadio Mane leaves? It's not a very healthy prospect for a team that has those superstars and is built around those superstars for next season if they don't make the Champions League.
No, definitely. If Liverpool don't make the Champions League, then it's not going to be great. But I think it's going to be, if that question was asked to Jurgen, it's going to be one of them. We'll approach that once we get there. Look, there's still a lot of games left. Yes, Liverpool haven't been great. You know, the results have been awful and they find themselves now way down the table and everybody is doubting whether or not they'll finish in the top four. So it's the case for them. You know, they've got some big games coming up. I know the Champions League's there. But as much as they're doing poorly in the league, you could never know with Liverpool. They could actually kick into gear in Europe and actually go kind of deep into the competition where you get to kind of a, you know, semi-final or whatever, which could give them that lift in the league. You know, sometimes when you play other competitions, certainly I did feel after the Leipzig game that they would kick on against Everton. No, that wasn't to be. But at the same time, it doesn't mean it won't happen going forward. But certainly the form, everything needs to be addressed. You know, they're conceding way too many goals. And they just look, it's just no spark up front with the front three. There's nothing. It's slow. It's lethargic. They need to be, I don't even know what the word is for it, but they just, there's no oomph in them. You know, they need more. I want to see more from the three of them because they're exceptional players and they're not producing.
There's been a couple of weird false dawns. There was the back-to-back games against Spurs and West Ham. Mm-hmm. Even the goal against Leicester was such a thing of beauty where it looked like there was a bit of oomph and creativity, and maybe if there'd been none of the defensive errors, they win that game 1-0 and you feel like it. But even the Leipzig game felt like, oh, okay, so, you know, there's still a little bit of, you're not sure about the defence, but actually, and then just a dead performance against Everton.
Yeah, no, like, the thing about the Leicester game was, yes, they're dominating. You know, they dominate possession for whatever it was, 68 minutes before that, you know, 7-minute meltdown. The thing is, I'm looking at the front three of them, and, you know, I've watched City over the weekend, I've watched United and whatever. Like, the only one of the front three who really, you know, grabs the game kind of by the scruff of the neck and has the ability to go by someone is kind of Mane, if you watch them. Like, Salah has a phenomenal amount of goals this season for a team that, like, haven't been performing at the levels that we know they can. I think it's almost papered over the cracks with some of his performances. You know, he's losing the ball too much. There's no end product, like, even some of his passes. I think Salah, certainly, in my opinion, as a Liverpool fan watching them, he's one of the most frustrating, yet one of the best players to watch. You know, you're pulling your hair out of him, and then he puts the ball in the top corner from, you know, 25 yards. He needs to find a consistent level, because it's only like, Mane is the only one of them three that, you know, when you pick a ball up, you think, this is dangerous. Now, I'm going to compare them to City in the sense that when you watch Sterling, say, Bernardo Silva, Mahrez, they have 3-4 players who have the ability to take someone on 1v1 and beat them. At the moment, Liverpool, you know, I don't know what it is with Salah. Firmino's never really been that one that will dribble by people. But Mane, of course, look, when we're talking about Everton, you know, you've got to give credit to Holgate and certainly Seamus for doubling up at times. But Holgate made it very difficult for him and you can see he was frustrated. But that's what they kind of need to, it's like they've got the handbrake on and they're kind of, you know, you can tell that they're going through a tough period, but they're some world-class players. They need to find ways to, you know, dig themselves out of this because their performances haven't been good enough.
David, one of the reasons that Liverpool were so good in recent seasons is that they were quite predictable, that it was quite repetitive what they did. Every game was just this intense, high pressure, don't let the other team out, suffocate them, wear them down, and then one of the front three finds the bit of space when maybe their concentration goes. Like, that hasn't happened over the last 7 weeks at all. But they're still trying to play the same game as last season without the centre halves without the centre midfielders and without any sort of a spark. Is the way of getting the confidence back and momentum back actually changing the system, getting away from the 4-3-3? Does Jurgen Klopp just need to try something different?
Well, I don't think he will, though. You know, Nathan, I know you watch a lot of Liverpool. You'll know that that's his way. Maybe alter it slightly. You know, I know, Jerry, you said there a while ago, but the fullbacks are probably 10, 15 yards deeper. I disagree with you. The fullbacks are still bombing on. I think the problem is, like, when they've had Kabak, Henderson, Phillips, whoever, that's not Virgil and Gomez. And I don't think, like, as much as Jordan is an exceptional footballer, he's not a centre-half. And, like, he's done fantastically well in that position. But there's going to be moments where you're caught in certain no-man's land where you're unsure. I think that's just that kind of natural experience from playing in a position for a long time. And I think maybe he does need to address in the sense that can we be a bit more solid? I think the big thing was Manchester City were shipping too many goals and there was obviously question marks. They bring in Diaz and now all we keep lauding is their performances. Even if you watch them against Arsenal over the weekend, you never felt that Man City were going to concede. Like Arsenal didn't have a shot on target, but that's come down. And they've got a back four, Zinchenko, Cancelo, Diaz and Stones. Of course, look, Laporte, you know, I know they do chop and change centre halves a little bit. But, you know, Liverpool's back four are just as good. Okay, Diaz is probably the one exception. But Man City have found that way to win. Like they played the game against Arsenal in third gear where they never looked like they were going to, you know, concede. They looked solid. Anything that was thrown their way, they dealt with quite comfortably. Like Liverpool need to find that. And I know it is tough because we're so used to seeing the full backs bomb forward, but maybe can we get them, you know, to tuck in and kind of leave teams come on to Liverpool a bit more to open up that space. Because at the moment, it's so slow that, like, even if you look at Everton, they're getting 10, 11 players back inside their own half. And it doesn't matter what level it is. You know, if teams are, if they're well organised, they're well drilled and they're on it, if that's a League One, League Two team, they are tough to break down. And, you know, it is difficult. And at the moment, Liverpool are kind of running out of ideas when they're going forward. And like I said, it's so slow and lethargic. And there was some stat that since, like, Thiago's coming to the team, they're averaging 65 more passes in the final third as opposed to a few years ago, which would suggest that it is slower and they're keeping the ball. They're almost playing like the way Man City play, where they just keep passing, passing, passing. We're used to seeing Liverpool play at speed. It's not direct football, but it has a sense of direction that it's just attack, attack, attack. It's just gung-ho and it's like 100 mile an hour. At the moment, it's too slow and it's too lethargic.
I totally understand that. And the point about the fullbacks was one of the YouTube commenters making that point. And I think that everybody is searching around for some reason. Nathan was saying it's the injuries, but you're saying that there's been a change apart from the injuries as well, that it's not just the injuries that has caused this. And it can't just be the injuries that they point to for the rest of the season if they are going to make the Champions League, because those injuries aren't really going to clear up in time.
No, definitely. Look, Liverpool with Virgil van Dijk is a total different team. There's no getting away from that. But Virgil, unfortunately, is out and he's injured. And, you know, from the moment of the Everton game where he picked up that injury, you know you're moving forward without him. The players would have more or less known that day that Virgil would have been out for the remainder of the season. You've got to move on. Look, of course, I would love him to be back playing centre half for Liverpool. I'd be probably smiling and joking here thinking, oh, they've beaten Everton if he was playing, and they'd be probably pushing Man City at the top two. But he's not there. You've got to address it. A lot of other teams have had a lot of injuries. I think Leicester have had one of the worst injury lists if you look at the players they've missed at certain moments, and they've found ways to continue on. And I think with Liverpool, you know, there has been a lot of jokes and a lot of people saying that there has been a lot of excuses. And as a Liverpool fan myself, we have made excuses. You know, we still have an exceptional team, exceptional players. We've got to find ways to win games.
If you're the owner, sorry, Nathan, if you're the owners, then you've got to make a big play this summer of making sure that Klopp hasn't had enough and isn't frustrated, and you've got to back him and you've got to make sure that he is up for the fight of taking it to Manchester City next year.
No, 100%. But at the same time, you need to sign the right players. It can't be a case of, we've seen, look, various different clubs sign players for, you know, 50, 60, 70 million, and it's not worked out. You know, whether or not the owners will give him money to spend like those sums or those amounts, we'll just have to wait and see, because, you know, obviously with them selling Coutinho, they could bring in Van Dijk and Alisson. So it is an interesting one, whether or not they'll give him that amount of money to spend. And then it's a case of, where do you spend? Jamie Carragher did a very interesting piece about every kind of year, Jurgen has signed kind of 2-3 very important players, which is taking them on to the next level. Now he needs to find players that are going to bring them back to the level that they've been at.
Ger, everything comes back to the injuries. If it was just Virgil van Dijk, Liverpool would survive. They would be in a scrap, you imagine, alongside Manchester City. Because, as David says, every team has injuries. And Leicester have had injuries during this season. But actually, it's worked out quite nicely that when one fullback's got injured, another one has come back. When one centre-half has been injured, another one has managed to come back. Every team has injuries every season. Liverpool had injuries last season when Alisson misses 10 games, when Jordan Henderson is injured. Manchester City have had injuries this season with Sergio Aguero and Kevin De Bruyne. That happens. Give me another example where a club has lost every single one of not just their centre-backs, but then the two replacement centre-backs who were brought in for them. The only team that could survive that is Manchester City. Would there is no
survive,
other side.
So it's finish in the top four, finish sixth? Like, where should they be? I mean, I think the point that David's been making is that the front three actually aren't playing as well as they need to, and that's... The midfield style has changed.
Style has changed because the midfielders aren't there. So they have lost Virgil van Dijk, the most transformative player in the Premier League of the last two or three seasons, and what he did for Liverpool.
They bought Thiago on purpose.
They lost Gomez and Matip.
They bought Thiago on purpose, presumably to change the style.
No, to play him alongside Fabinho and Jordan Henderson, I'd imagine, in an awful lot of games. Fabinho and Jordan Henderson haven't been there. Like, did he make a mistake taking Jordan Henderson out of midfield? Should he have gone with one of the youngsters and kept Henderson midfield over the last few weeks? The stats would certainly suggest that he should have, because I think it's 2 defeats in 77 with Henderson in the middle of midfield, 5 defeats in 8 with Henderson at centre-back. But Henderson, last season, in almost every big game, was the key man for Liverpool. All of this is part, as I say, of the jigsaw of his style, and that is what David was talking about, of this is the way he wants to play. You need centre-halves with pace who can play right up on the halfway line. You need midfielders with an insane work rate and energy, because it's this shock and awe that Liverpool played with last year that disrupts the opposition. That means Van Dijk can play this 70-yard crossfield ball to Alexander-Arnold, who is an advanced role. That doesn't happen anymore.
On a point of information, didn't they concede 3 to Leeds in the first weekend of the season and however many against Villa when they had that full team and that shock and awe was still there? Haven't teams also...
Well, Henderson didn't play against Villa. Alisson didn't play against Villa.
But Van Dijk did. Like, you said Alisson missed 10 games last year and then Henderson missed games and they managed to deal with it this year. All of a sudden, they didn't. My point is that teams also got better and started to work out and looked at the video of the style of play, and that a load of different things are going on here, and that you're making excuses, like David said, that it's just the injuries.
The injuries is 90% of what has gone wrong. What happened after the Aston Villa game? They went 12 games unbeaten. They put in some of the performances of the season. They destroyed Leicester. They destroyed Wolves. They put 7 past Crystal Palace. Like, they didn't collapse after that defeat against Aston Villa. They got it together. They went on a run. But they have, again... Give me an example of any other side who have lost every single one of their centre halves and then their replacements as well. Now, there's the other question of the resources that were there. And in January, should they then have gone out on day one of the January transfer window and spent 50, 60 million? They probably should have. And the effects of that may be quite catastrophic for Liverpool if they don't finish inside the top four. But clearly, the business model of the owners, which they will feel works and that Michael Edwards is a genius working under, this may have been a fatal mistake they made for this season. But you cannot get away from the fact, if Virgil van Dijk and Joe Gomez are fit all season, Liverpool are winning the league.
They're not. Because Manchester City are about to put together a world record breaking number of consecutive victories. They're 6 games away.
There's no pressure on them now. Watch them yesterday. Like, it was so easy. They're 15, 16 points clear.
David?
No, I agree with Nathan that I would have always backed City to win the league. But I definitely think if Virgil and Joe are fit, then Liverpool are really knocking on the door. And I think even as, you know, if you look back to when Man City had that bad period, I think Liverpool, if they continue with, you know, Virgil and Joe, they pick up more points. And I think it's City who are playing catch up. Now, I backed City from the start of the season. But, like, I get where Nathan's coming from, because Liverpool, not only have they lost every centre-half, but they've lost them for the rest of the season. Like, I brought up Leicester. Leicester have players coming back at different periods. As Nathan said, you know, one gets injured. Yeah, it has been difficult. But you've got to get on with it, though, Nathan. You know, we can't just sit here and kind of say, like, oh, we're missing, you know, obviously Matip, Joe, Virgil, Fabinho. Obviously, Jordan picks up an injury the other day. Don't know how long he's going to be out for. Like, of course, but you don't then... I need more from, like, at the end of the day, I need more from my front three. You know, everyone's quick to say, you know, your forwards win your games, your defences win your championships. You know, the forwards aren't winning games. And that's why, you know, we'll never win this championship, because they've not done enough.
We've got a poll on Twitter. Will Liverpool make the top four? You can vote at OffTheBallAM on Twitter. There's a load of, and tell us why as well, use the hashtag OTBAM. You mentioned about the back four of Manchester City, and we wanted just to tease that out a little bit about the role of Cancelo and also the specifics about Diaz that make him so good. We've obviously, you know, he's brought stability, he's brought leadership. What's he doing on the pitch that make you think, ooh, because you tweeted about how he's going to be the world's best defender in the next couple of years. What is it specifically that you think, wow, that's great?
In my opinion, he has the same impact Virgil had at Liverpool. And that sense of calmness. He's big, he's strong, he's quick, he's very comfortable on the ball. You see him yesterday where he's not going to pass on, he'll just take the ball out, defends with ease. He's one of those defenders you can hang your hat on. He's not afraid to tackle, you know, be physical. He's just got every attribute. Now, of course, look, there was massive question marks when he came in. I don't think anyone, but Pep probably did, expected him to have, you know, the impact he's had. But he's like a young Rolls Royce. He's phenomenal. And if he keeps going the way he's going and keeps learning, keeps progressing, in 2-3 years' time, he will be the best centre-half. There's no doubt in that.
The role of Cancelo is obviously pretty interesting as well. This is a player who signed at the start of last season and who signed for big money and didn't really have any impact at all last year. And now this year has kind of become a key man playing in a bunch of different ways. Is he the new Philipp Lahm?
Wow. Philipp Lahm is one of the best players in, you know, German history. Oh, it's a bit of a jump. Cancelo, yeah, look, it usually does take these lads when they come over into the Premier League. It does take them in the best part of 6 to 12 months to settle in. I think he's found his way and Pep has found, you know, a system to get him going. Look, he's fit. He's very good going forward. I think there was the most question marks over him defensively. But at the same time, now they've just found a way to be solid. And, you know, the role he kind of plays where he kind of drifts into midfield.
That's what I meant by the lamb, by the way.
Well, you need to state that, because then, you know, once you, people get exaggerated and they take it out of context. No, look, that's the genius of Pep, you know. He has certain ways of tweaking things where, like you said, if you remember back to his first day, when he was first in charge of City, when he had Clichy and Zabaleta and that, and they were drifting into midfield to create these overloads. He's done that before. And certainly Cancelo is someone who's very comfortable on the ball. You know, he's good on either foot. He's skillful. And he must understand that system, which has benefited him to kick on. It is very different to kind of see fullbacks, you know, playing that way, as opposed to, say, Liverpool or United, where the fullbacks stay high and wide and try and bomb forward down the line. But certainly what Guardiola has done to Cancelo has been incredible.
How do you compare this City side to that first championship-winning team that had probably the spine of Ederson, Kompany, Fernandinho, David Silva, Sergio Aguero? It's been quite a transformation over the last couple of years.
I think the Manchester City team that you referenced there, the first one, is better than this team now. I think, you know, with Aguero, Silva, De Bruyne, whatever, Kompany, those boys, it was just exceptional. This team now, I think... Once they kind of got on a run of wins, you know, it's like no other team has really pushed them, have they? Like, we've seen so many different teams. Like, the only team that's been in the top four all season is Leicester. like Liverpool have fallen out, you know, United have gone to the top, come out, Tottenham are the same. I think nobody, like whichever team was able to find that consistent, stable run of victories were always going to kick on and do well. And City have found that, like as Ger touched on, they're going on for, you know, the all-time consecutive win records. I think there is it 18 now, which is unbelievable. But it's every game they go into, they're just finding ways to win. Like the, yesterday, it's fair to say, like, you know, a lot of City fans will say they were poor, whatever, for the levels we're used to seeing. But they look like, to me, they look like they're in third gear. They don't look. But certainly the first City team, I think, was had more about it. Were like a better team.
The concern for the chasing pack is that there's every chance this Manchester City team now get better. I was talking about that bench, which probably the most valuable bench in the history of the Premier League yesterday. Walker, Laporte, Mendy, Rodri, Jesus, Aguero, Torres, and Phil Foden, who they got for nothing through the academy. Over 300 million on the bench plus Phil Foden. And they're talking about signing Lionel Messi during the summer. I think Andy Mitten was on last week saying you'd have to imagine that if Haaland or Mbappe are going, that while Manchester City aren't top of the queue right now, they'll be right in the mix for them as well. City, we know, are going to invest, whereas the rest of the clubs, there's probably big question marks hanging all of them heading into the summer.
No, definitely. I think that's been a big thing of Manchester City over the last few years. They're willing. I don't, is it 500 million Pep spent on the defence, which is like unheard of. They just have the money, they have the funds, they're going to keep going. But at the same time, they're not untouchable. You know, if you look at the start of the season, they went through a really bad run of form. Of course, they've managed to put it all together and now they're on this winning streak. But at the same time, they're going to come again and teams are going to have to invest wisely. Not going to be able to spend the kind of money Manchester City are. So whether that be Liverpool, United, you're going to have to sign those two, three key players in key areas because, you know, if City do end up getting, like the big one, they're probably, I can't even say they're lacking because you look at the form they're in, but kind of that next Aguero. Jesus, yes, is a very good player, but he doesn't look like he's up to the level of Aguero as, you know, a young Sergio Aguero. Obviously, Sergio's had his injuries and I won't say his best is behind him, but like it's tough for him to kind of, you know, chalk out a season of full 38 games. So if they were to get, say, Haaland, I don't think they'll get Mbappe. I think he's his heart on Real Madrid, in my opinion. Messi, it's a tough one. I still think there's that love for Barcelona that he won't leave. But time will tell.
Yeah, you stick Haaland in that team and all of a sudden the rest of world football is going, oh my God, how do we ever stop this? I did want to just chat briefly to, because we're kind of hurtling towards big games for Ireland very soon. Great to see Seamus Coleman in good form. Really unfortunate to see, I mean, obviously as a Liverpool fan, sorry, but it is great.
I'm happy for him. Yes, I'm happy for him. Yes. I spoke to him after the game and I said, no, I am happy for you.
I think he was in pretty good form, was he?
Oh yeah, yeah. I won't tell you what he said to me, but yeah. But I'm like, as much as I'm a Liverpool fan and I want Liverpool to beat Everton, it even pains me to say it, but he knows. Like for me, I love Seamus and, you know, he's one of my closest friends in football and he's captain of Everton and they've not done it since 2010. And you know, for him, like he'd been kind of in and out of the side, you know, he was coming on late in games and whatever. And then like for him to go and like the performance he put in, there's probably a case from his man of the match, you know, and he limited Andy Robertson, which is a very difficult thing to do. But he was phenomenal. I'm happy for him. I am happy for him. I don't know. I'm not happy for Everton, but I'm happy for him.
When you think about his career and the setbacks that he's had along the way, to keep coming back every time, like every single time somebody counts him out or doubts him or they buy a replacement at right back or they buy competition, his performance levels go up and up and up. It's fairly remarkable.
Yeah, but it's like you can take the boy out of Donegal, but you can't take the Donegal out of the boy. He's got that fight in him. He's got, you know, that humble upbringing of, you know, it's testament to his character, as you said, like, you know, they bring someone in and it's just like, well, hold on a minute, I'm not going to roll over. And he just keeps on going and going. You know, that's... They bring in Sabide from Monaco, who's kind of like a World Cup winner and that, and it kind of looks like Ancelotti's going to play him, and then Seamus kind of goes, well, hold on a minute, you know, I'm not being shifted yet. And he'll continue to do that. That's just testament to his character, the way he is. He just never gives up. Like, he's got a great, you know, fight, desire, determination, but he's also got the ability obviously to stay and play at that level, which is massive.
He must feel like he has a point to prove in an Ireland jersey as well, because he hasn't actually played since the night he was sent off over in Switzerland. He's missed all of the Stephen Kenny era so far. I know he wasn't selected for the first couple of matches, but he ends up missing out on the playoff. And he's in a position where everybody is raving about Matt Doherty for the last couple of years. Those constant comebacks, is he someone who gets a chip on his shoulder that it's something that he's in his head, I need to prove these people wrong?
No, I don't think. I think with Seamus never thinks he needs to prove anyone wrong. I think he likes to remind people. Is probably a different way of putting it than, you know, prove people wrong. He likes to remind people, I'm still here. I'm still a very good player. I'm not going anywhere. And that's the big thing. Of course, look, certainly you guys pump up that thing between Doherty and Coleman. Like, the two of them are very good friends and everything. Like, that's the thing. There's no, with the Ireland change room, there's no egos. There's no, you know, no, yes, players are in competition, but there's never, it never boils over. Of course, look, Stephen chose to go with Doherty. Now it's flipped on its head, where Seamus is, you know, in great form, and Matt's obviously not in the best of form with Tottenham, who aren't doing well. You know, I think I've said this numerous times. I think they've lost. They needed Seamus's leadership. I think even for someone like Shane Duffy, if Seamus plays alongside him, you see a totally different Duffy. Seamus is—he's a captain, he's a leader, and he'll bring those qualities onto the pitch. So it's all good and well being, you know, in and around the place before a game, and, you know, trying to lead the team and give them experience, and, you know, try and calm them down or talk to them, encourage them, whatever it might be. But on the pitch is totally different, you know, because that's where it really matters. And if Duffy, say, for argument's sake, is going to play, I don't know what, you know, obviously Stephen's going to do. I think if Seamus plays alongside him, we'll see a totally different Duffy.
All right, that's something to hope for anyway. David, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us.
Cheers,
this morning.
Please.
Cheers.
Thank you.
David Moyle giving us some good thoughts there about the weekend's football. We'd love to hear from you as well. 0879 180 180. It is 11 minutes past 8.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.